The most popular sport in America causes head trauma. Some of its most famous players have been convicted of domestic abuse. And the game's most glamorous star has been accused of defying the rules with deflated balls. Sounds like quite a marketing plan, doesn't it? But NFL football remains the most popular and lucrative sport in America, even as fans question the game. How do you enjoy a playoff game if you think a team might be doctoring the footballs? Or that half a dozen players on the field have been accused of violent crimes? Or that a dozen might suffer brain damage at the very moment you're cheering? Greg Easterbrook has a book, The Game's Not Over, in Defense of Football. And Greg Easterbrook, a contributing editor of The Atlantic and Washington Monthly and well-known political columnist, joins us in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
So what does football say about America?
Well, at one level, it's a fabulous sport. I love the sport and attend way too many football games. But at another level, it's the athletic expression of the United States. It's too big, it's too loud, it's too expensive, and we can't figure out what the proper use of force is in football. Well, what has the United States been engaged in all through the post-Cold War, especially era, trying to figure out what's the proper use of power? That's what our national sport is about.
So you're taking the famous George Carlin monologue that notices the similarity between phraseology and football and war to yet another step.
Another step, yes. And that famous monologue was 1975, just as the Vietnam War was ending and the country was deeply conflicted about the use of the military there. Was it right or wrong? I think the country was looking for something that was similar to military expression and yet didn't have these terrible moral quandaries of life and death. And what did we find? We find football is very military-like, but there's no life or death question involved. And add to it that it's a fun sport to watch, and that took over American public consciousness.
There may not be a life or death question, but as you certainly acknowledge in the book, there is a harm question.
We wrongly think about this issue in terms of the NFL. No one wants an NFL player to suffer brain damage, but there's only 2,000 of them. They're grown men who know the risk they're taking, and they're well paid for the risk that they take. Almost all concussions in football happen to children at the youth and high school level. There's somewhere around 200 concussions a year in the NFL. There's 200,000 concussions in youth and high school football, and that's where the head trauma crisis is.
Yeah. Even if you think that professional football players are highly paid and the information is freely available and they can make their own choices, is it hard to watch the game now that we know so many people are going to harm themselves while they play it?
I actually, Scott, I watch way too much football. I go to the Super Bowl every year, and I do so without the slightest compunction. I don't feel any ethical reason why I shouldn't watch and enjoy. People get hurt riding bicycles. There are far more deaths bicycle riding than there are in football, and we all watch the Tour de France. Nobody thinks there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's any reason why an adult can't make an informed choice to engage a relatively small risk per year in return for a lot of money. I think the equation is very, very different for high school boys and youth players.
I want to ask about the domestic abuse issue, the whole question about whether a violent game on the field translates to personal deportment and crimes of which so many football players have been accused. Terry Bradshaw, former NFL quarterback, many years standing announcer now, had a pointed monologue a few weeks ago saying, just this bluntly, if a man is convicted of domestic violence, no NFL team should hire him. Why do they?
Well, at first, I would certainly agree with what Bradshaw said. Yes, anyone who's been convicted of a crime of violence not only shouldn't play in a football game, shouldn't be in an office environment or any other kind of workplace. I go over in The Game's Not Over the statistics showing the likelihood that an NFL player will be arrested versus adult males of the same age. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that an adult male of the same age is three times more likely to be arrested than an NFL football player. So even if you assume that police are letting NFL players get away with things because they're stars, and I think you probably should assume that, the NFL, because of its outsized nature, becomes the mirror in which we see the reflection of a social problem that's very large. And it certainly doesn't excuse any NFL player who's guilty of domestic violence. It just tells us that there's a larger issue in the country as a whole.
You recommend a few reforms toward the end of the book that you think would be better for football and maybe and better for those who play it. And let's list a few if we could. You say get rid of kickoffs.
Yes. Head injuries are far more likely on kickoffs than any other play because both sets of players are running directly toward each other at full speed. After a touchdown.
And eager if you're on the taxi squad, if you're on the kickoff and kickoff return squad, they're eager to show what they can do.
Exactly. If you talk to high school coaches about this, and I think high school coaches would be very big on eliminating kickoffs, It's the second string guys who play special teams. They want to impress the coach by being reckless. So some second string 17-year-old who's never going to play in college anyway recklessly injures himself on the kickoff, and the solution to that is get rid of kickoffs.
You would recommend requiring every team to disclose the amount of painkillers their players are taking.
Yes, there have been many NFL scandals in recent years. I think the scandal that hasn't happened yet and will is painkiller abuse. This is a game that generates a huge amount of pain, and yet the players play recklessly and seemingly fearlessly as if they didn't care what damage they did to their bodies. That's because they're drugged. But if each team had to disclose the volume of prescription painkiller it consumes, I think the country would be scandalized.
Greg Easterbrook, his new book, The Game's Not Over, In Defense of Football. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.